Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case this morning is United States v. Washington. Ms. Day.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. Melissa Day appearing on behalf of Defendant Appellant Washington, Petrie Washington, this morning, Your Honor. We are here arguing that Mr. Washington was arrested as a result of an illegal search and seizure. In this particular case, the officers began with a description of a large black male wearing a white T-shirt and black jacket. Having gotten a firearm from an unusually colored vehicle, there were no other descriptives given of the individual. The individual did not provide his name or other identifying information. He stayed less than or up to 2 minutes with the officer. The officer asked no further questions, although he did get an identification on what the officer later called a chameleon-colored vehicle.
Didn't he go back to the parking lot with the officers to point the car out?
He was there in the parking lot with the officer,
And indicated that others in the lot were not the people he was talking, was not the person he was talking about.
He indicated that he did not see the individual, which is slightly different, and I assume the officer must have taken that to be a slightly different comment because he began then to search available black males near the vehicle. He searched one gentleman who was a black male who was just under, he believed, 6 foot, and one black male who was just over 6 foot. He described one as obese. He described one as wearing a black jacket and another as wearing a long-sleeved black shirt. So he took the description to be very general and began searching black males. Obviously, any black male would have sufficed.
No, anyone was standing next to the car, actually.
At that point, yes, any black male standing near to the vehicle, mm-hmm. he was searching.
And they quickly denied that they didn't own the car, because that was the first question.
Yes.
And consented to a search.
Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. That didn't hamper the officer using that generalized description to seek to search black males in general. He got no further corroborating information. He did not get haircut. He did not get facial hair, tattoos. He did not find out about the pants or the shoes. He did not find out the age of the individual. And I suppose Your Honors have read the transcripts. Obviously, I argued that this was such a general description that it meant three of my own family members. It is just too general to have given probable cause to stop anybody. There are some other things that go along with that.
Of course, it doesn't take probable cause to stop them.
I'm sorry, reasonable suspicion. My apologies, Your Honor. And the lower court called this a close question as to whether that tip by itself provided that reasonable suspicion. And I don't see, I beg to differ, I don't see any way that that would by itself have provided that. So the court went on further to look at the totality of the circumstances to see what that added. And there were some things that were missing that would have enlarged that, would have given something to that totality of the circumstances analysis. For instance, there were no indigent circumstances. There was no suggestion that a firearm was being waived or about to be used.
Gosh, I don't know, though. The potential for firearm in an active area there, it's after 2 o'clock in the morning, lots of people sort of milling around and doing things. That sounds pretty serious.
I think it's somewhat akin to the JL case where, I believe it was Florida versus JL, where there's a description of a gentleman, a young man in a plaid shirt with a firearm. And they find a gentleman meeting that description with a plaid shirt. And when they arrest Mr. Washington, he doesn't even meet the full description that they have, limited as it is. And part of what the court indicated there was there wasn't something more, some use of the firearm indicated. And having a firearm, yes, is illegal. Having a firearm you don't see doing anything really doesn't add anything to your reasonable suspicion because you don't see the firearm. The officers never saw the firearm until after the stop. So does that make you more concerned that there's a firearm in a large crowd? I believe that it would. On the other hand, there was not one other individual that said they saw a firearm displayed. So this could also be the sort of situation where people can generally say anything they want to get the police's attention and get them to go after somebody.
Well, the officer did think that this informant was credible, that he was concerned, and he said what he saw, and he led the officer to the car and then left. He didn't want to be identified as associated with the officer. Now, then the next thing after this search of the two, he sees the large black man looking at him intently. Now, these officers are trained. You can come up with whatever reason why they have several officers there, and they do this every Friday and Saturday night because of this area. You can say, well, maybe they shouldn't be that way, but whatever the reason, that's what they do. That's what they're assigned to patrol, and that's what they're trained to do.
I understand. It's a college town. This is adjacent to dormitories and bars, which I'm sure were conveniently placed because it's a college town.
And there had been a shooting there within a couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks prior to that, not in that block. That was at the bars in that area are not in that block. This was in front of eating establishments. The next block over houses the bars, and that's where there had been a shot fired report a couple of weeks back. I don't recall specifically that it was a shooting in the sense that anybody was injured, but I think there was a shots fired call in that area. I don't think that the officer's journey was quite as quick as that summary provides. I believe there was some additional testimony that the officer wandered around, went and checked other areas, talked to other officers. Nobody else saw anything. He then went back, and that's when he saw back in the area a large, what he later described as not obese, and this 2 minutes or less than 2 minutes of contact with this reporting individual, the officer says that he did believe him. He found him credible, but he has nothing that he can base that on, no name, no further description. That's a scared individual who leaves, but that could be a scared individual who left because he knew he was doing something wrong in making this report. So the officer is really trying to read too much into that and trying to bolster his own determination. But they go up. At the time, Mr. Washington is doing nothing wrong but leaning beside a building, and he's not wearing a black jacket. So the minimal description they have gets reduced even more.
But there was something that in the car that appeared near the car.
A small gray sweatshirt in the vehicle. The officer said that he didn't know that. That's what it was.
He didn't know that at the time, but
right.
It might have appeared that the jacket had been ditched.
Right. But again, he's expanding upon a limited and really non-existent description by reaching for straws and trying to come up with something that's going to give him the ability to make this reasonable suspicion stick. And it just wasn't there. Unfortunately for the officer, fortunately for Mr. Washington, there was nothing that he did prior to the time that they seized him that would have justified this stop, and there was nothing in the circumstances to give rise to a totality of the circumstances belief that they could stop and seize Mr. Washington. I will, if the court has no further questions at the moment, reserve the remainder of my time.
Well, so, thank you. Mr. Liggins.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tom Liggins. I was not the attorney below, but I have read the briefs and made myself familiar with the record. Of course, this is the what is before the court is the reasonableness of a Terry stop, and the court evaluates that on the basis of the totality of the circumstances. And our position below, the court's ruling below, and what we are arguing here today is that when you look at the totality of the circumstances in this case, then this was an eminently reasonable application of police discretion in stopping, conducting the Terry stop on the defendant. You have a situation where an individual walks up to the police on the street. It's not an anonymous call. It's not analogous to the anonymous call cases. You have an individual who actually approaches the police on the street. The police is able to make an eyes-on evaluation of the credibility and fortitude of that witness, and that witness tells the police there's a guy over there who got a gun out of a secret area on a particular car, and then he later goes and points out the car and describes the individual to the police officer. Then the police officer, knowing this is a high crime area, which I think is also has to play into the reasonableness of what the police did.
Well, some treat that with some disdain. I know that they say high crime area, but there were reasons for this, as I understand it, that there were several officers assigned there.
Yes.
There are people who are assigned or have additional training for, I don't know how you patrol an area where it's people are milling around and confronting each other and doing things that are, well, after they all exit the bars, they in a condition that may be provocative, I guess. But that's the way it's described. Now, of course, you weren't there either, but is that enough to have that kind of patrol and that kind of, we'll call it alertness on behalf of the police?
I believe it is. I believe, and you know, objectively, if you look, the best objective proof that this is a high crime area goes back to the point Your Honor just made. I mean, people who are going to get public approbation if they don't adequately protect the areas in that city see fit to put extra officers in there. They see fit to put them in bulletproof vests. The businesses in that neighborhood, the record shows, have their own security forces there with bulletproof vests.
Their own security, I know that there was a, the officer did say something to a security officer who said something that, frankly, I don't think the district court even used that. But there was some indication that when I think the officer, I guess, I don't know what they did. Maybe that's why they didn't discuss it. I'm just curious about it. What was it? If maybe you don't know any more than that.
On what was
but
discussed?
The security guard of one of the bars.
Yes.
Was familiar with this person.
Yes.
They said look out for him.
Yes.
Or something or other. And I don't know whether that even comes into play here.
I think it should come into play because,
well,
again,
I guess it did it with the judge.
I don't know that it was certainly something we argued before the district court, and it's something we argued in our briefs before this court.
In the judge's entry on it, he refers to the security guard from Don Taco.
Yes.
Saying something to him about this defendant.
Yes.
Is that what you're referring to?
Yes. And what happened was the anonymous tipster says a guy got a gun out of this car, out of a secret compartment in this car. The police officer goes over. There's two people standing around the car. He says, do you guys have guns? They say, no, you can search us. He did. Then he looks around. And
I think first they denied owning the car, didn't they?
They denied owning the car, but they assented to the search. So he patted them down, found no guns, and then starts looking around to see if he can identify who owns the car. He sees one person in the out of the crowd staring at him intently while he's looking around the car, and that's the defendant.
No, that was right after the search of the two men?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Well, that's all we have is whatever your understanding is.
And then that happened after the search. Then he sees the individual who is looking at him intently, and that's, as I understand it, when he notices him. He asks the store security, the restaurant security, to help look out for the car, and that's when the store security says, yeah, that guy over there, we've had reports on him, he's trouble, or something to that effect.
Didn't say he owned the car, though, did he?
Didn't say he owned the car. And but he, from what the officer said, is he was the only one looking at me intently when I was looking at the car. And so that's why he focused on him. And then, of course, he gets the report from the restaurant security that he has been reported to be a problem. And that's when he starts walking toward them, and he starts to leave.
So his evasiveness, or whatever they want to describe, caused them to call him to stop, which he did.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a factor. That's another point. I only had a couple of points that I wanted to make sure I made, and one of them was that counsel seems to think that as long as what you're doing is technically legal, it can't contribute to a Terry totality of the circumstances. And yeah, he might have had a legal right to walk away from the police, or even as they described, walk away quickly. But that doesn't mean that they can't take that into account in their totality of the circumstances of whether or not he was the likely person to have the gun when you add it into the other factors at play here. And certainly walking away from the police and trying to get away from the police when you know that they're looking at them is something. I mean, a police officer is going to take account of that. In this case, the situation that the police were confronted with here was a high crime area, and by high crime, I mean they had people there who were dealing with people relieving themselves on the sidewalk, all the way up to, as Your Honor pointed out, to reports of gunfire in that vicinity just a couple of weeks prior to that. So you had the whole gamut of activity. You had a carnival of people, some drunk. You have a situation where the police are, and the security officials around there are concerned enough about security that they wear bulletproof vests. And you have a report from what the officer perceived was a concerned citizen saying, not only did a person have a gun, but that he had just gotten it out of a car. And I think that's also an important fact, because an officer could reasonably think if you're going to retrieve a gun and carry it, there's a reason for that. I mean, it would have almost been better for the defendant if the report was that he carries around a gun all the time. The fact that you're going to retrieve a gun and carry it around in that location is itself further justification for that this was more than just what could conceivably be a benign situation. If you're going to retrieve a gun, a reasonable apprehension is that you're planning to use it. So given all of the circumstances in this case, given the totality that the court applied and given the case law on this subject, it's our position that this search was reasonable and that this court should so find. And if there are no further questions, I'll yield the remainder of my time.
Thank you, counsel. It's Dave? How much time? You have 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honors. I would quickly try to address a couple of things that counsel stated. First of all, I would just note that this issue of walking away is as void of a suggestion of being determinative of illegal conduct as standing still. And
well, wait a minute, though. The police had been looking at his car where there was a report that a gun had been removed from it, so the fact that when he notices that, he leaves the area, that does...
They did not know that was his car at that time.
Well, they wondered whether it was. Why else would he walk away?
I'm sure they wonder about many things that don't add to the totality of the circumstances or reasonable suspicion. Not agreeing that this is a high crime area, but I'm sure they wonder why people are urinating on the streets when they don't need to, Your Honors. That wondering doesn't rise to that level that is needed to establish factors that can be considered in the totality of the circumstances. I would ask that Your Honors respectfully ask that this case be remanded. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Day. Ms. Day, you took this case by appointment? You didn't take it by appointment.
Pretty good job, huh?
Well, in any event, thanks to both counsel for a fine job.